So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Taking your questions today on Trending as we approach the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade this coming weekend. I'd like to dive into the topic of abortion, taking your questions, especially questions surrounding pro-life answers to pro-abortion and feminist arguments. So often we hear questions come up about, well, what if something's wrong with the mother? You know, is abortion an option? Why shouldn't it be? Does that leave a woman in a harmful position if she doesn't have an abortion? What about the cases of rape? These are common questions we hear, but we're going to dive into many of the common objections, even those radical feminist objections where people say, well, you're just trying to control women, and that's what you pro-life people are doing by continuing to promote pro-life laws. So today on Trending, your question goes, love to take your questions. Number's 1-888-914-9149, or you can comment live now on Instagram. I'd love to hear from you. Take your question. And it may be a question you've never even heard someone ask before, but you thought, hey, this would be a really good pro-abortion argument if someone were to throw it out there. And you know, it's a head scratcher. I don't know what that answer would be. That's okay. We're here to dive into those as the conversation sparks this week from the pro-life marches occurring across the nation, especially after some of the pro-women marches that are not very pro-women because they absolutely exclude the pro-life perspective. Before we go there, did you hear the news? This is laughable and sad all at the same time. You may be familiar with DePaul University that claims a college identity, a college Catholic identity, but they're now allowing students to choose their own identity, gender, whatever you want to call it, male. There are 8 options: male, female, intersex, non-binary, transgender male, transgender female, cisgender, unspecified, and, quote, I do not wish to self-identify. Yeah, I don't think I wish to self-identify. I would rather just know, because that's a nice thing. We can just know. We don't have to self-identify. We don't have to choose from 8 options. You can just know. Isn't that great? Isn't life so much more simple when we can know that there is such a thing as truth and pursue it? This is what is laughable, that it's occurring at a Catholic university, because as Catholics, we uphold to intellectualism. Intellectualism where we see reason and faith collide in a good way. They continue to help push forward that truth is consistent in Christ, it's consistent in nature, it's consistent in psychology, sociology, it's consistent in sciences, diving into medical sciences. God gets it right. And so this is why it's funny and sad all at the same time, that as we pride ourselves as Catholics in our education system, that our Catholic education system at DePaul University is offering 8 genders. My favorite is, I do not wish to self-identify. This is almost like the most Catholic option of these 8, because that means I'm not trying to choose my own reality. At least I'd hope. Or maybe I'm just really confused and I have this philosophical attitude that I am nothing. I don't know what I am. I cannot know what I am. You know, I hope that their philosophy professors really tear this one apart there at DePaul University. But what's fascinating is Michael Wright, who's the assistant vice president at DePaul in the registrar's office, said that DePaul has wanted to promote ways for students to express their identity if they choose to do so. What does expressing your identity have to do with saying that you're something that you are not? It's lying to young, impressionable people. It's confusing them. And it's leading to a whole lot of heartbreak, because people are literally going through with bodily mutilation. They are damaging their bodies through biochemical hormone makeups that are false realities through literally amputating parts of their bodies. Gender dysphoria has been known as gender dysphoria for years. The American Psychological Association even still to this day recognizes it as gender dysphoria, just it's not popular to say so, but go look in their manuals. Go look at the actual research, even though they may say one thing online and another thing in their latest manuals. You see, this is why we have to tell the truth. One man, one woman. Two options. This conforms with our biological reality. This difference between male and female is literally written into cells throughout the entire body. From the way our muscles function, yes, even to the way our brains function differently, there's nothing wrong with that. To the way our body is built and set. The jawline, the shoulder chiseling, the jaw chiseling, I mean, everything to the hips, all of it. There's a difference between male and female. We come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. Sure, can there be defects in the body? Absolutely. Sure, can there be legitimate things that occur when perhaps someone is born with ambiguous genitalia? Yes, but what's great? God didn't make mistakes. He created us with chromosomes, and from those chromosomes, we can understand whether we're male or female, XX, XY, have you heard of this before? It's a basic understanding of the human person. Now, so then let's say that not only is a genitalia ambiguous, but let's say in some very, very, very rare instances, so are the chromosomal makeup that you can dig into. Let's say that's damaged too. That would be a rare and slim chance where that does occur at times. Or then perhaps there would be, you know what, we don't know. There was some sort of deformity that occurred in the development of your chromosomes, of your DNA. There was some sort of developmental damage that occurred in the development of your body parts. And that would be an example, that would be an unfortunate example where something went wrong. But those cases are rare. And in those cases, yes, they do come up with solutions to help someone function in society, but you don't lie to a person about their reality. You don't say, hey, yeah, you are biologically a female. We know that from birth. But 20 years later, if you want to take cross-sex hormones and go through with a top surgery or bottom surgery, we don't then say, sure, go ahead and do that. But then try to have a child later on. Try to engage in intimacy later on the way that God created it. Guess what? You can't have kids. Guess what? You've done damage to your body for years to come. This is why it's sad, it's laughable that DePaul University, a so-called Catholic college in the United States, is now allowing people to choose from 8 so-called genders. I think a challenge for all of us to ponder today is, as we hear over and over again about, quote, identity, perhaps we need to ponder, as people of faith, what our identity is in light of being creatures before a creator who created us with a purpose. That's important for you and I to understand so that we can live the reality that God has implemented in our lives, in humanity, in all of creation on the earth, to help people understand and seek truth. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. It's a pro-life hour. Any question goes, especially relating to answering pro-abortion and feminist questions you've heard, or maybe just a pro-life argument you've heard that's kind of a head-scratcher. Maybe you've come up with it before and you thought, you know, I can't respond to this pro-abortion argument. It would be extremely helpful if someone did. I'm taking a number that have come in to me arguing the pro-abortion side, and we're also going to look a little bit at post-abortion syndrome as well. That is the impact on a woman of really the impact of having had an abortion after the fact. Let's start with, I think, a question that's really important that we're addressing today. And I was listening to one of the National Abortion Rights podcasts this week. And one of the big arguments that they throw out over and over again, brainwashing pro-abortion advocates, is that the pro-life movement is all about control. and forcing women to remain pregnant. This is why they have forced, quote, pregnancy laws. It's fascinating to hear that argument because the reality is I've worked firsthand for years with women in crisis pregnancy, and what I've seen time and time again is that women don't choose abortion freely. They often do it under duress, and they often do it as a band-aid to address other life situations. Not being married, not knowing the father, not being in the right financial circumstances, not being done with school, being too young, being too old. All of these things, there are influences making them think that this is the only option they have. Here's the reality. When abortion access goes out the door, guess what happens? A community, a nation, has the opportunity to step forward. People do help women who are facing unplanned pregnancies. Surprises. Whoops. Believe it or not, the community is there, just like they have been for century upon century upon century before. Sure, were there derogatory words used for a child born out of wedlock? Absolutely. Is that right? No. But did we know as a community how to step forward? Well, as people of faith, this is what we're known for. For stepping forward when other people are in need, no matter the circumstances, no matter the contagion of various illnesses. The church has always been there. And this is why it's incredible when you see where pro-life laws are implemented, where abortion is restricted, pro-life pregnancy help centers are there, and they're helping women in the midst of their lack of plan, of a planned pregnancy, to have the support they need. You need to finish going through college? We'll help you with tuition. We'll help you with babysitting. You need to find a job? You need to learn how to interview for a job? We'll help you in coaching you through interviews. You don't know how to change diapers or put your baby in the bath? You don't know how to nurse? We'll give you courses. This is what's so incredible about our crisis pregnancy centers. They're helping women in seemingly impossible and unplanned circumstances to be equipped and fortified so that they don't feel forced into having no other choice but abortion, or forced into making a decision under duress to have an abortion, a choice that impacts them for the rest of their life. And we'll talk about post-abortion syndrome in just a little bit. And also a choice which leaves them a lost mother to a child whom they did participate in ending that life. Imagine that lifelong, long-term impact. Even if they perhaps don't have physical consequences, which some do. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. It's also important to recognize that laws restricting or banning abortion save babies' lives and they save moms from the aftermath. This is why I think it's important to help people understand pro-life movement isn't about control. It's about freeing women to make the best choice for themselves and their child in a culture that's made it permissible and legal and for some reason conscionable to make a terrible choice for them, their future, and their child. You're listening to Trending with Timmer here on Relevant Radio. If you have a question, we're giving pro-life answers to pro-abortion and feminist arguments. We're taking your questions now on Instagram, as well as giving me a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Ask your question now. I have a comment now from Tess on Instagram. Who, quote, forces a woman to be pregnant? Outside of a physically violent situation, women have the ability to control whether they get pregnant or not. Great point. We do choose whether or not we are going to act in a way that leads us to potentially have children. That's where people say, well, I didn't consent to pregnancy. Yet again, we have to help people understand, even in a culture that's pro-contraception, you may not have consented to pregnancy, but the moment you consented to sex, you did consent to the potential of being a parent. And this is something that has to be reinforced in our society. This is why we do have to talk about contraception when we talk about abortion. So if you have questions about contraception as well, now is your hour to ask those questions, to understand how it works and why not only are we against contraception as Catholics, but as pro-life people as well. And unfortunately, not all pro-lifers are unified on this, but it's an important part of the conversation when it comes to abortion. Even though it might make it a little harder to win an argument with someone who's pro-abortion, it is important that we don't back down, that we tell the truth. Because at the heart of the reason we have today for abortion, it started with contraception. It started even before that with taking sex outside of marriage, but contraception is what allowed us to take sex outside of marriage. When you take babies out of sex, and then you take sex outside of marriage, well then, the purpose for marriage is lost. The purpose for sexuality is lost. The identity of motherhood and fatherhood go out the window. I had a fascinating conversation last week about moms working outside of the home and husbands being the primary breadwinner, and we had a huge number of responses on this. We may even get to some of those today, if not later this week. But I think it's an important conversation because we're missing the fact that the way we function in society today has radically changed over the last 60 years. Yes, access for women in terms of education, the workforce has increased. The gifts of women have contributed in incredible ways to society, but sometimes at the detriment of choosing to end the lives of our children, of biochemically manipulating our bodies, leading us as women when we are on the pill toward an increased sense of anxiety, an increased inability to function properly in terms of how our hormones were created to function for optimal health. Taking your question today on trending pro-abortion feminist arguments that you've heard, love to hear from you. Okay, here is another one that is so often thrown at many of us, which I find hilarious because I rarely actually bring my faith into any argument about abortion. So when someone says, well, it was the Catholic Church that first brought the pro-life position to the forefront, yes, there is a commandment and it says, thou shalt not kill. But do you need to be religious to know that you shouldn't kill? I think most of us would go around believing that I shouldn't kill another human person. So just because we follow a commandment through divine revelation doesn't mean that that's at the heart, per se, of our pro-life arguments, our pro-life response. I rarely bring my faith into it, but I did want to bring that up. That's the only difference in many respects. We're following, yes, the law of God that inspires us to not kill, not just big people, because I think all of us can agree we don't want to kill big people, but we also believe that you shouldn't kill little people who are innocent and voiceless. That said, if someone approaches you and says, well, this is just a religious argument, say, no, it's not. I haven't brought my religion up once. I could, but I'm not going to. It's not wise to unless maybe you're talking to a person of profound faith and yet they're still pro-abortion. So here's the reality. It's not a religious argument. Why? Because there's a baby and there's a mother. Maybe there are even two babies. The reality is there are two people present in the decision surrounding abortion. The whole argument, my body, my choice, doesn't make sense. Why? Because there are two people. There are two beating hearts. In fact, two sets of ears, two sets of eyes, two noses, and half the time, even two sexes. Yeah, I think that that's where we could start talking about gender identity dysphoria and so forth. Imagine that. If it's your body, your choice, well, when you're pregnant, I could understand why you're confused. No wonder the pro-abortion side champions transgender arguments. But I digress. Here's the reality. Even atheists for life and even secular for life, secular pro-life, advocate for the pro-life position, and they have no religious views whatsoever. Actually, I wrote for a number of years for Seculars for Life and giving completely non-religious arguments. And what was funny is when someone would actually look up and find out that I was Catholic, they would be so offended. And even though they would complain, the reality is I wasn't making religious arguments. Unless someone Googled my name and found me, they would never have known that I was Catholic. So at the end of the day, religious arguments, people accusing you that you're pro-life just because you're religious, sure, that's, yeah, the harder part of the reason why we're pro-life, but that doesn't make up our arguments. Our faith is so human-centered. It is so scientific. I've said this time and time again. When my husband's come to some of my in-person presentations and lectures I've given and training sessions on the gender issue and abortion and contraception, every single time he says, wow, the church is so scientific. Because what sociology, what psychology, what basic understanding of health teaches is that indeed all of society, secular or religious, should be pro-life, should be pro-male or female. We should be anti-contraception because it's what's healthiest for the human person. Okay, another argument I've heard people make is that what's wrong with you pro-lifers, us pro-lifers, is that we want to force women to have ultrasounds before they have an abortion. How dare we desire for a woman to A, validate that they are indeed pregnant and that they have a viable pregnancy. Understand me here. Why on earth, whether you're pro-abortion or pro-life, would you want a woman to go through with the trauma and aftermath of abortion if her baby doesn't even have a beating heart, if that baby has died, if something's wrong with the baby, if she's had a miscarriage? You know how many people actually go through with abortions before their pregnancy is even considered, viewed as actually there, present, that baby is alive? And then that woman goes through the aftermath of knowing she had an abortion. We need to be performing ultrasounds to confirm that the child is there, that the child is healthy, that the woman is pregnant, that's a viable pregnancy. A kicking, moving human being. So that's one reason for the health psychologically of a woman long term. Second, for the health of the mother, making sure the baby's where the baby is supposed to be. But also we have to recognize that there are incredible statistics at a minimum that when a woman sees her ultrasound, 8 out of 10 women, if not more, choose to keep their babies. I'll never forget the first time a woman who had found herself in a crisis pregnancy and unfortunately did go through with having an abortion. She didn't want anyone else to ever have that same experience. So when a friend of hers, more so an acquaintance, found out she was pregnant, my friend Melissa, after having befriended her through her process of having gone through the abortion and trying to help provide other options to her, she ended up telling her friend Cynthia, hey, don't have an abortion. Talk to my friend. I've been there. I've done that. It was terrible for me. And listen, she has a lot of compassion and she has resources that can help you. So I end up talking to this woman, Cynthia. And she ends up, I go with her to have her ultrasound. I remember it was the first time I remembered being in the room for an ultrasound. And when she saw her baby, her life completely changed. She had been trying to self-induce a miscarriage before that because she didn't want to have an actual abortion. But when she saw that baby living, breathing, moving, it changed her life. And not only that, she thought she was only 10 weeks along. She was 16 weeks along, which means that Planned Parenthood would have tried to give her RU-486 abortion. An abortion that's a do-it-yourself at-home 2-pill process abortion. She would have given birth to a dead baby at home that was much larger than she planned for. All the more traumatic, yet Planned Parenthood, because they don't do ultrasounds, because they don't support ultrasound laws, they're leaving women psychologically damaged and hurt by objecting to this simple medical practice. You could even argue it's not even just pro-life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. I'm taking your questions. We're taking questions, pro-abortion, feminist arguments that you want to be able to respond to as a pro-lifer. The number's 1-888-914-9149. Or you can comment live now on my Instagram with your question. I would love to hear from you. Follow me at Tim Murray. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Diving into many pro-abortion and feminist arguments as to why abortion should be legal, we need to be able to respond, especially as I'm very hopeful we will see Roe versus Wade overturned this year, and the battle over abortion will return to each individual state, and we have to be a part of helping convert hearts and minds. We'll be right back. Don't go away. I Are you ready for another Gentleman's Hour? This is Timmy from Trending with Timmy. Have you ever heard of failure to launch syndrome, a phenomena of refusing to become independent and self-sufficient? How do you think this has impacted men today? Did this impact you? Why or why not? Join me Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app. Today's show is sponsored by Colby Academy. With more than 40 years of experience in Catholic home education, Colby Academy offers a blend of classical Catholic curriculum and the latest educational technology. More info at relevantradio.com/Colby.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmy on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Taking your questions, how to respond to pro-abortion and feminist arguments, or perhaps even an argument for abortion you heard or made up, where you just kind of scratch your head and go, I don't even know how I would respond to this. Love to hear from you. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We have tons of questions coming in. Simply Mary on Instagram asked, why do pro-choice activists refer to babies in the womb as, quote, fetuses instead of babies? We know it's a human and can be nothing else. Great question. Fetus is actually a Latin word. In the majority of medical terminology, they use Latin, and fetus is Latin for infant, young one, child. And so when they use fetus to attempt to dehumanize, depersonalize the baby, it's for the purpose of trying to separate the idea of baby, personal, human. They're trying to, again, dehumanize the child, but the reality is they're just using another language to refer to another human person. So, sure, sometimes in conversation, if someone's insistent they're saying fetus, I said, fine, we can say fetus if you want, but fetus is a Latin word, which they don't even realize. They think that it's something that means less than a human, but it's actually referred to as a stage in life. You have a zygote, you have an embryo, you have fetus. These are all medical terms that are used. So if you want to use the correct medical term, fine, I can do that with you, but we have to define our term and make sure we agree. But again, they use it to depersonalize the argument. Okay, let's see. Judith from Milwaukee is calling. Judith, what's your question?
If I think we need to speak more of personal responsibility, sexes and for adults, it's a huge responsibility. In this society, no one wants responsibility for anything. So I carry a gun, my hand was in the trigger and someone got shot. I didn't do that. So the car got jacked and I didn't do that. We don't want responsibility for nothing.
Judith, this is a really great argument that, you know, as a culture, we don't like the idea of responsibility. And yet, built into us as human beings is the idea of love and responsibility. This is what makes us human, that we can love another person and even grow to love them even more so by the level of responsibility we have. And this comes back to our actions. This comes back to our responsibility in terms of how we interact with other people, how we engage in intimacy. So I think that, you know, what you're saying is very important, that at the heart of it, we do not, as a society, that those who do support abortion, we don't want the responsibility of parenthood. And that's one of the arguments people make, that sure, I may have gotten pregnant, I may have consented to intimacy, however, I did not consent to being a parent. And so people believe that they should have to consent to becoming a parent by choosing whether or not to carry to term and have their baby or abort. And this is, I think, at the heart of understanding if Roe versus Wade is overturned. If abortion is abolished in all the states or state to state, we have a challenge in our culture to overcome the attitude toward abortion that is so permissive. Because what was made legal, people begin to think is conscionable. People believe to think it's right. But just because something's legal doesn't mean it's right. So I think that that's a really important argument to recognize when it comes to the pro-abortion arguments we're hearing today. Okay, we have another question coming from Katie. She said she's a registered nurse, and should pro-abortion arguments that pregnancies might be, quote, high risk or need to be aborted for mother's health? She said, is that really, if that really were the case, an OBGYN would be giving normal care at a normal hospital, not an abortion clinic. This is a great argument. A lot of people say, well, we need access to abortion for the life of the mother or because of high-risk pregnancies or because something's seemingly wrong with the child. Therefore, a person should have the option to terminate. Did you know? This is really important. Did you know that 85% of women's health experts, OBGYNs, do not perform abortions? We're talking about nearly 9 out of 10 of women's health providers do not perform abortions. If abortion were basic health care, if it was life-saving care for women, then they would perform abortions. We wouldn't have places such as abortion clinics, which, by the way, majority of doctors, physicians have no desire to perform abortions. For multiple decades now, it used to be that being a foot doctor was kind of, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend you if you're a foot doctor, but like culturally, it used to be if you're a foot doctor was kind of like one of the lower level looked at doctors. Now it's an abortionist. If you're an abortionist, there's a very high likelihood that you have multiple things wrong in terms of how you practice medicine. You see, an abortion is not a life-saving and necessary procedure for a woman. And listen to this, because this is a very important distinction. There is a difference between an early delivery of a child and an intentional abortion. I'll say that again. There's a difference between early delivery, that is, delivering a child that perhaps may not survive outside of the womb, but we do everything in our power with modern medical technologies to try and save that baby. There's a difference between that and intentionally going in and ending the life of a child. Perhaps there may be a legitimate medical reason for inducing pregnancy early and delivering a child early. That is totally different from actually going in and performing an abortion. And so it's so important that we are able to give this distinction. Because if there is a legitimate life-threatening medical emergency, which is very rare that a woman will actually need to have an early delivery, well, in those instances, sure, give the option for early delivery, but do not put it on the conscience of the woman that she consented to having her child killed. And don't put it on any medical professional or non-medical professional to have to go in and kill that person's child. And I come back to this, and I hope you'll remember it. 85% of women's medical health experts, OBGYNs, do not perform abortion because it's not life-saving care and it's not basic women's health care, as some people would like to argue. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Perhaps you have a question in response to being able to respond to pro-abortion and feminist arguments. I'd love to take it. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Okay, I want you to listen to something that is absolutely shocking. We're going to talk about this in just a moment here. But one of the common arguments that the pro-abortion movement has been making, especially over the last 10 years, as they see that pro-lifers have been incredibly successful at sharing the narrative that abortion hurts women and therefore changing the hearts and minds of many people and leading to an increase in pro-life laws. One of the arguments they make is that pro-life people, quote, anti-choice people, don't protect minorities, minority populations. It could be any number of groupings of people that they like to argue, whether it be the poor, the young, again, the impoverished, various races. But here's the reality. The pro-abortion movement lies about how abortion helps minorities. Abortion access is more available in minority communities than any other community. They've led minority communities to believe that abortion is necessary for equality and necessary to live out the American dream. The founder herself of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, is known as a eugenicist. She has ties to the Ku Klux Klan. She has ties to Hitler. She is quoted. You can watch numerous videos. We should do that one time. Maybe we'll do that later this week. Listen to some of the things she said about creating a race of thoroughbreds, about abolishing, getting rid of the, quote, Negro population, as she says in her own words. That's Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. And what's fascinating is, in fact, one or two pro-abortion Planned Parenthood advocates in the last year, in the light of the crisis surrounding race relations fueled by the media, well, some of the pro-abortion Planned Parenthood advocates have even said they probably need to distance themselves from the Planned Parenthood founder herself. But the reality is they, that is Planned Parenthood, are on the record for knowingly being racist. A number of years ago, Live Action, that's Lila Rose's organization, about 10 years ago, maybe even more now, went in undercover and did a number of sting operations exposing what happens at Planned Parenthood. But one of the operations she went through was they actually recorded calls of people going in to make donations, fake donations, for babies to be aborted by Planned Parenthood. And they specify what type of baby they would like to be aborted. So listen to this now. Again, it's an undercover phone call being made to Planned Parenthood to donate money.
Good afternoon, this is Autumn.
Hello, Autumn. I'm interested in making a donation today.
Fantastic.
What about abortions for the underprivileged minority groups? I want to specify that abortion to help a minority group. Would that be possible?
Absolutely.
Like the black community, for example?
Certainly.
Okay. So the abortion could be, you know, I could give money specifically for a black baby. That'd be the purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. If you wanted to designate that you wanted your gift to be used to help an African-American woman in need, mm-hmm. Then we would certainly make sure that gift was earmarked specifically for that purpose.
Great, because I really face trouble with affirmative action, and I don't want my kids being disadvantaged, you know, against black kids. I just had a baby. I want to put it in his name, you know. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So that's definitely possible.
Oh, always.
And we just think, you know, the less black kids out there, the better.
Understandable. All right. Excuse my hesitation. This is the first time I've had a donor call and make this kind of request,
sure.
So I'm excited, and I want to make sure I don't leave anything out.
Did you hear what she just said? The woman accepting the donation at Planned Parenthood ended the conversation by saying, I'm excited. I don't want to make any mistakes. I've not received a call like this before. The call was someone undercover, recorded by Live Action, calling to make it a donation in the name of his new child to abort, to kill a baby who is black. And he makes it very clear, I want to make sure that this money goes to abort a baby that is black. And he goes on to talk about how he's against affirmative action. He goes on to talk about all these things about how he doesn't want his kid around black babies. You want to talk about racism? This is what the pro-abortion Planned Parenthood itself has been involved in since its inception. The abortion movement is a racist movement. This is why the majority of their abortion clinics are in minority areas. This is why they target and market to minority people. And they've lied to them, making them believe that in order to have equality, in order to live out the American dream, in order to have an education, in order to work, that you must abort your children. And here, we will give it to you for free, and we will make it easily accessible. So don't buy the lie when the pro-abortion movement, when someone who's pro-abortion tries to claim by reducing access to abortion that we're hurting minority groups. I know firsthand, having worked for years in the crisis pregnancy centers, that the majority of women we serve are women who are in the minority demographics. And so it's very important to understand that we have worked as crisis pregnancy centers, as people of faith supporting our crisis pregnancy centers, to pull people out of poverty, to pull people out of dire circumstances that would have otherwise led them to experience horrendous post-abortion syndrome, which we'll talk about if we have time later on today, if not this week. It would lead them even to have medical aftermath effects that is incredibly negative for their bodies, especially in the instances where someone is going to an abortion clinic in an impoverished community where medical standards are not upheld. We have to talk about this, and we have to be willing to completely blow out of the water the argument that we are not in favor or loving toward minority communities when we decrease access to abortion. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. We're taking your questions to pro-abortion and feminist arguments. The number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can also comment live on my Instagram asking your question. You can find me at Tim Murray, that's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Thank you to our longtime sponsor, Solidarity HealthShare. Enroll now in Solidarity One, a new program with expanded options to fit any healthcare budget. Solidarity One offers access to prescription drugs and new discounts for seniors. Learn more about this exciting new healthcare at CatholicHealthShare.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Taking your questions, pro-abortion and feminist questions, how to respond as pro-lifers. It's the Supreme Court anniversary of Roe versus Wade this month, which legalized abortion through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy. We're taking your question. Number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can comment live now and ask your question on Instagram at Tim Murray. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. One person, Frank, on Instagram commented saying he's loving the show, and he said, from an experience from loss to fatherhood, this does affect the father in so many ways, and thanks be to God, I was able to reach out to Rachel's Vineyard. If you or someone you know has been through an abortion, whether you're the father of a woman who's had an abortion, or perhaps you yourself have gone through with an abortion or know someone, please know this resource. This resource, you deserve hope. You deserve healing. There is no sin that's unforgivable by God. And any woman, any man who's been through or participated in an abortion needs to have that healing support, because it's traumatic and it is carried for years to come. So I want to encourage you to check out rachelsvineyard.org. That's rachelsvineyard.org. We'll include links in the podcast notes for today's show at relevantradio.com/trending that will be available later on tonight on the show. And I'll post a link to it after the show as well on social media. But please save that and give this as a resource to people you may know who have been through an abortion. rachelsvineyard.org. This is why we are a pro-life movement, because we are pro-woman as well. And even if a woman does unfortunately go through with having an abortion, we want her to heal. We want her to make it past that horrible experience, know the healing mercy of God, but also to be equipped to not make that decision again. So rachelsvineyard.org is an incredible resource for healing resources, secular and religious, as well as healing retreats that a woman and even men can go on as well. Okay, we have a number of questions coming in. Let's see, a lot of questions surrounding personhood that I'd like to touch on. Let's go ahead and go to Charles from Fremont. Charles, what's your question for us today?
Hi, Tim Murray. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm definitely in the pro-life camp, but I think a lot of pro-abortion people, they take a very highbrow philosophical approach, and they're willing to grant that science is, yes, it's life, and yes, it's human life, but then philosophically or epistemologically, they want to know, okay, well, when exactly does personhood begin? But I would kind of throw that back and say, hey, it's precisely our humility that we don't know when it begins, that we're better safe than sorry and not killing something. And so that's my only comment. You know, it's kind of a slippery slope, and it seems to me philosophically, and that alone is enough to say, hey, better safe than sorry. Don't kill something that might be a person.
Charles, you're right. A lot of people will argue, well, okay, I can concede it's a human being, but we won't say that this is a person. And the personhood debate is a big one, something that could be a true game changer. In fact, Justice Harry Blackmun himself, who penned the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision, actually commented that if at any point the baby, the fetus, as he refers to it, is granted personhood, if personhood is established for the baby in the womb, that in this case, essentially all of it collapses. For the fetus to have a right to life would then be guaranteed, specifically, he says, by the 14th Amendment. So what we're seeing here is that if personhood were granted, as that is a legal protection, personhood gives you legal protections as a human person in our society. Here in the United States. And so this is why the personhood argument has been one that has been fought for often and is very important. So that's one side of it, because again, if personhood, if the baby in the womb is granted personhood status, well then Roe v. Wade completely crumbles. The legal right to abortion goes out the door, because the 14th Amendment states that no person shall be deprived of life. It goes on to say, without due process of law. Well, that baby needs to be born. Right? And so there's a lot to dive into there. But the other part of the argument you just made, Charles, is important, where people try to say, well, we don't know when the baby's a person, so shouldn't we just be safe rather than sorry and see what comes out at the end? The reality is, we know when human life begins. We have tons of medical research and science showing that children can dream in utero, suck their thumb. I mean, I've even seen preferences for months where I've seen ultrasound images of the same baby. Images where I remember seeing a baby with his leg kicked back and holding his ankle in utero, that he loved to kind of lean back and hold his ankle. Well, I've seen pictures then of that same baby outside of the womb with that preference, holding his ankle when he sleeps, the same way he did in his mother's stomach. You know, we try to dehumanize, depersonalize, and I think that part of it is that at the heart of this personhood argument is understanding that a person has a personal trajectory, a personal reality, personal thoughts, personal development, that we try to dehumanize and depersonalize. And because of this, the child has no legal protection according to our law, because the child has not been granted, quote, personhood status in our society today. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Tons of questions coming in. I wish we could dive into all of them. Caesar just asked a question on Instagram. You can still ask your question, 1-888-914-9149, or on Instagram at Tim Ray. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. He said, what do you say to a friend that had an abortion 24 years ago? This is actually one of the things I really wanted to talk about today. I know some people even close in my own life, who have had abortions, whether teenagers or now in their 60s, 70s, 40s, that they carry that burden, that horror, that brokenness of abortion. Even if they continue to be pro-abortion, they carry it. They go through therapy. It comes up even with secular pro-abortion therapists. Did you know that the vast majority of therapists across the board actually have to talk about abortion and have to talk about trying to help find a path forward of healing for women? So what's the option? If you have the opportunity, please share about rachelsvineyard.org. Rachelsvineyard.org, it's an incredible opportunity for women and men to go through with a healing experience after having had an abortion, whether it's 3 weeks after an abortion or 50 years after an abortion. Now, Grant, we may not always have that opportunity to share this. Maybe there's a way in polite conversation, not directed at that individual, where you can share about Rachel's Vineyard, but I do recommend share the Rachel's Vineyard on social media. Talk about it. Make sure your pastor knows about it. Make sure that there are flyers in the back of your church. Vast majority of women have had abortions in our families, in our friend groups. So please be prepared to share the information to help save a life, change a life, and to even help people put back together the broken pieces of their life as years goes as the years go on. I want to talk about post-abortion syndrome later on this week on Trending. We'll be talking about the pro-life issue all week as it's at the forefront of our thought and the news in the face of the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade. More questions coming in. Let's see, who do we have more having to do with personhood? Peter from San Jose. Peter, what's your question?
Well, there's the issue of that really gets into the religious aspect of it. If a human is not a human without a soul, then it depends on when the soul bonds with the fetus. And so that's a purely religious definition. The Catholic Church teaches the moment of conception, but other people could say it's the moment of delivery. And they would say that the mother is constructing a home, a temple for another spirit. And while that home is under construction, i.e. while she's pregnant, it is merely an extension of her. And when she delivers that to a new soul, that is when the new soul has entered the body and become a person. Now, there's no way.
Right. So I'm going to cut in here because we just have a few moments, Peter. So great, because this does hit on religion. And I think that it's important to recognize that there are philosophical and theological arguments that we will have at times surrounding abortion. And when those come up, we need to engage them. You know, the reality is that science is incredibly clear when human life begins. Do we know when God gives that soul to the human person, to the baby? We don't know. This is one of the great revelations from God that he's not divinely inspired to us. That said, we do believe that that soul is present at the moment of conception, at the moment of fertilization, as we discussed. And we know Jeremiah 1, where God says to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you." That makes it pretty clear from a theological perspective of the presence of the soul intended by God from the beginning.